Can you find the earth in this picture? Let's zoom in a little. Oh, there it is. For a long time, discussion of the next step in space has seemed to center around the exploration, settlement, and even terraforming of Mars. Only a few percent of the Earth's surface is truly hospitable to human life. How much benefit is there in leaving this planet for a smaller one, which will never be as welcoming, no matter what we may do to it? Concentrating on planets means ignoring the space we pass through on the way from one to another. We think of it as empty, but it receives plenty of energy from the sun, and there are the comets and asteroids to consider. Is there potential here which is being overlooked? O'Neill and his students certainly thought so. They envisaged using the freedom of weightlessness to create structures and even materials impossible on Earth. Solar power stations beaming down limitless energy from orbit, and factory satellites combining that energy with materials from space to supply the needs of the world without poisoning the land, water, and air. Even mammoth orbital habitats, veritable islands in the sky where thousands or even millions of people might live. With the resources of the asteroid belt, they estimated it would ultimately be possible to create thousands of times the surface area of the Earth in such space colonies, each one with an environment precisely tailored to suit its inhabitants. Using mirrors to concentrate or diffuse sunlight, they could be located within the orbit of Mercury or beyond that of Neptune. And other sources of energy might even loose them into the deep interstellar night. Rather than being confined to the surface of one planet, or even of several, humanity would be set free among the stars. That is the goal of space development: peace, freedom, and prosperity on this planet and throughout the universe. So, how far have we progressed? 50 years since the first human went into space, we're still struggling to learn how to live in weightlessness. The International Space Station doesn't have a shower or a washing machine, and the less said about what they use for a toilet, the better. The food is all prepackaged, and a lot of it is a year or more old by the time the astronauts get around to eating it. And when they go to work, it can take them hours to complete a task you or I could finish in minutes here on Earth. The worst part is, it's in a decaying orbit. Without regular supply flights, it will fall into the Earth's atmosphere and disintegrate, leaving NASA and its international partners with nothing to show for 20 years of construction and $200 billion. What we need then is someplace halfway between a planet and open space. Someplace with matter to build things out of, but no atmosphere to get in the way. Enough gravity to settle the question of up and down, but not enough to hold us down. Someplace not too far away, which we can get to in a few days. Someplace things will stay where they are put, preferably someplace people have been before and gained experience working there. Now, this is scarcely a new idea. When the concept of the space station was first worked out in the 1920s, as a refueling point for spaceships, it was realized that the moon would be more favorable if propellants could be obtained there rather than brought from Earth. The L5 proposals of the 1970s contemplated that a lunar base would supply materials for industry in near-Earth space until the asteroids could be reached. As we know from Apollo and more recent science, the soil contains oxygen in plenty, silicon and metals for our industries, and traces of other substances in quantities sufficient to support life. The healthy-looking plants in the top row there were grown on moon dust. Think of it: gravity to hold the ingredients while you cook, and even fresh food, no more eating out of cat food tins. Only 3 days' travel away, our little neighbor world is an ideal environment for people and their machines to get a head start on space development. But whose job is it? NASA, for all its accomplishments, is an agency of the United States government and can only do what Congress and the President tell it to do. With the moon being used as a laugh line in political campaigns at the moment, we have little hope there. Today's financiers prefer trading pieces of paper to doing anything real. There are many pro-space membership organizations, including the Students for the Exploration and Development of Space, the Moon Society, the Planetary Society, and the National Space Society. But without a clearly articulated goal and a sense of urgency, they tend to become consumed by internal politics. The time has come, therefore, for all of us who look to the stars to declare for the one near-term goal which is within our reach and which will open the door to the long-term. That goal is a lunar human settlement based on manufacturing and agriculture, starting from present technology, using lunar resources first for self-sufficiency and then to support development inward toward the Earth and outward to the planets, the asteroids, and the distant stars. This is the Luna Project. It is nothing less than a proposal that the space-minded among us, of whatever age, nation, or walk of life, should join together, pool our skills and strengths, and equip an expedition to depart for the moon as soon as possible to establish a home there. It is not an organization. We have enough of those if we can but mobilize them. It is an activity which individuals and groups of any kind can participate in. You could call it an open source space program, or the ultimate expression of the do-it-yourself spirit, bringing the space age to a personal level and at the same time creating an entire new world. And space development is not merely material, it is also intellectual and spiritual. Who can say what new ways of living, thinking, perceiving humans will develop in a new environment? What new arts or new sports they will invent? Rather than a sterile manifestation of technocracy, the movement of man into space has the potential to be the greatest cultural movement of our times. It is also a return to our roots. Before NASA, before the US Army, before the German Army, Wernher von Braun was a member of the German Society for Spaceship Travel. Later in life, he built space rockets for anyone who would pay him, whether or not they realized that was what they were paying him for. But he began building them out of a pure desire to go into space, a desire that in his case was never realized. Let it not be so with us. And when I say soon, I mean soon. From a purely technical perspective, the first party of settlers could be ready to depart within a year or two. It is an error to imagine that completely new technologies are needed. How would we learn to use them? Rather, we must begin with what we know and let experience be our guide, which we can only do once we have gotten started. Some will call this overbold, but it is better to suffer by an excess of boldness than by a lack of it. I, for one, am not content to wait for a someday that may come sometime to someone, if not to me. I want to see the Earth in that other sky, to plant not merely my boots, but the seeds of life in that new soil, to build with my own hands the foundation of everything that is to come. And for the sake of that, I am reconciled to giving up the familiar, to leaving the planet of my birth with no intention of ever returning. I will not, I cannot ask the same of you, but I can and I do ask for your assistance. In field after field, the old gatekeepers are going away. Musicians are finding that they can make and sell music without the record labels. Filmmakers are making and selling movies without studios. In fact, they think these things can only hold them back. And the same is beginning to happen with space. Entrepreneurs who made their money in other fields are building and flying rockets and preparing to do the same with manned spacecraft. Private individuals have bought trips to the space station, and a tourist flight around the moon is in the offing. If a few wealthy individuals can accomplish such striking things, what might the millions of us do? And I do mean millions. Even if only one American in every 100 has the slightest interest in space, That is 3.5 million souls. And America accounts for only 1/20 of the world population. NASA cannot send anyone into space unless Congress and the President tell it to do so. You and I are under no such restriction. If NASA chooses to buy rides into space from commercial providers, why, we can do the same. And if it chooses not to do that, that need not stop us. I won't tell you that there's so much momentum now that it can never be stopped, but the push needed to keep it going is less than ever before. There is certainly no reason to let our dreams wait for fulfillment on others who do not care about them. If you're asking by now, what part can I play in this? The answer is any part you are ready to play. The project requires every kind of effort. We need publicity to spread the word. By mouth, by new media, by every means in between. We need research to pull together all the study and work which has been done on these topics, not only to guide our own efforts, but also to convince those who ought to be working with us. We need voices inside the professional and public organizations to guide them in our direction. We need all the arts and sciences, biology as much as physics, medicine as much as engineering, music and poetry as much as any of these, for we mean to move not merely the heavens but men's souls as well. So I put the challenge to you. Will you take up the greatest work of our time? Will you make it possible for man to put aside the limits which he has acknowledged as inevitable ever since he first recognized that the world was round? Will you reach out your hand to lift all of us up and out? Will you take the Luna Project for your own? The stars are ours.